Hello and welcome to French Weekly podcast. My name is Chris. I am your host. And firstly, apologies, we're a little bit later than planned this week. Schedules are what schedules are. You know the drill, dear listener, but thanks for being here. And a big thank you to the returning Mr. Jeremy Smith for joining me this evening. Jez, how are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks.
Excellent, excellent. We were talking before we started the pod, but commiserations, obviously. For the Brighton result, but I'm sure you enjoyed the run, and at least you had. Oh no, sorry. Maybe we should just leave Mets out of the conversation. But the fight goes on, right? The fight goes on. I hope you had a good break anyway. So,
Yeah, I feel like the 2 weeks I missed mess one, so maybe I should stop doing podcasts till the end of
yeah,
the
either that or you just need to holiday a lot more,
season.
which sounds like a far more appealing end of things. Phila's not with us this evening. She's not feeling the best, so we've given her the night off, and Jez and I are just gonna fire our way through three main topics. Liga in a moment, but we're going to start in Europe, Jez. And I feel like, because we've only got three French teams left in the three competitions, we can just rope them all together. PSG, Lille, and Marseille are the three we're going to talk about. Lille in the Europa Conference. Let's start with them. So they qualified, and their result was a draw with Aston Villa. Probably, dare I say, the one team they probably didn't want, given Unai Emery's sort of record in Europe, etc. But am I being a bit optimistic when I say that I think Lille have got a really good chance to win this competition, especially under a coach like Fonseca? I don't feel like this is I don't feel like Villa is the end of the road if the right Lille turn up. What was your sort of thoughts on that draw?
I mean, without sort of remembering offhand all eight teams that are left, I think, yeah, I'd say that Lille and Villa must be sort of among the favourites to win it. And so it's a bit frustrating that Lille were drawn against Villa at this stage, which sort of still feels a little bit early for them to meet. I think, as we've discussed before, just because of the massive difference in resources or whatever, I think if a Premier League team isn't a heavy favourite to win any European competition, there's something seriously wrong. And at risk of turning some Villa fans against me, I feel like they've been spending an absolute fortune for the last few years, and arguably they've been underachieving until this year. So, lots of fuss about how well they're doing in the league. I think they're only doing what they should be doing in terms of how much they've invested. So, yeah, it's a little bit frustrating because it would have been nice to avoid them till later in the competition. But Lille, I think they blow hot and cold, but there's a very talented group of players there. There's a couple of real match winners there. I'm sure players like, Jonathan Davis and Joe Grover will be sort of seeing this a little bit as a kind of shop
Shopping tactic.
window as well. So, I think they could give Villa a good match. I don't know how not how seriously Villa will take it, but they do have the distraction of, seriously challenging for Champions League places in the Premier League. So that's probably the priority for them. But at the same time, it's a very good opportunity to win a European trophy and to sort of guarantee a place in the next one up, which they'll probably do on the basis of their league place anyway. So Villa, I think, definitely start as favourites, but I don't think Lille can be discounted at all. I agree with you.
Totally. It's Villa against Lille. The winners of that tie will play the winners of Olympiacos against Fenerbahce. And if you saw what happened with Fenerbahce at the weekend, that one might be quite spicy. Pilsen, Victoria Pilsen against Fiorentina, and Club Bruges against PAOK Salonika is the other quarterfinal. So, yeah, I don't want to sort of say it's a guarantee, but you would feel like the winner of that Villa Lille tie would fancy it, and maybe Fiorentina from the other side of the group would be the ones that would fancy that draw. Moving into the Europa League then, which is where we find Marseille. Oh, God bless Marseille. You just never know what you're going to get, do you? Life is like a box of gases. They came through against Villarreal just. They were 4-0 up and cruising from the first leg, and contrived to lose 3-1 in the second leg. And they were 3-0 down at one point before Jonathan Clauss popped up and got what proved to be, I said, the clincher. Villarreal were pushing really hard. It could easily have gone to 4-4 in aggregate, but they got through. Their reward is a tie against Benfica, which conjures up memories of them playing, I think it was the Champions League year in the 80s, was it? I think it was the 80s or early 90s anyway.
Early 90s.
Early 90s, sorry. And the winner of that tie will face either Liverpool or Atalanta. And on the other side of the draw, you've got AC Milan against Roma and Leverkusen against West Ham. So this is definitely a tougher ask for French representation. But do you fancy a Marseille masterclass or a Di Maria diamond as Benfica are the opponents? Where are you going with that tie?
I think, first of all, I just want to say that, how good it is to have three French teams left at this
Yeah.
stage of the season,
For
which
now.
is a real, it's a real rarity. Marseille got slightly lucky, or probably more than slightly lucky. They're probably a little bit lucky to win the first leg 4-0, and then, as you said, they were sort of hanging on at the end, and the 3-1 scoreline not flattered them, but that one, as you said, could easily sort of transferred onto Villarreal's debit sheet and been 4-0 itself. So a big sigh of relief that they're through. And considering the other teams left, and I think I've said it before, but to me, actually the Europa League is to the Champions League what the Championship is to the Premier League. It's obviously not the same level of quality, but it's so much more interesting a competition. Rather than the same teams again and again and again, like we're seeing in the Champions League, the same ties that we see year after year. There's so much more competition. I think it's more sort of homogeneous. It's harder to predict who's gonna win. And so, I think at this stage it's still a very, very tough competition. There's all the teams left have got real quality through them, and arguably Benfica is not the easiest, but certainly I think they could have had tougher draws there. And I think, Benfica's pedigree, I don't think they're having, am I right there, not having the greatest season, or am I thinking of Porto?
No, they beat I'll look it up, but they've had a, I think it's fair to say, a mixed season. They are up towards the top, but it's not been a vintage season by any stretch. They are currently second behind Sporting, a point behind Porto, are the
Okay,
ones that are
it's
struggling. So
right.
yeah.
So it's Porto. Yeah, I mean, Benfica again, like Marseille, they're the kind of team that are sort of, they've got that European pedigree. So even if they are struggling in the league, they seem to be able to raise their game or just know how to play with or play in or deal with Europe, which I think is what Marseille have done a lot of the year. Even when they've been struggling in the league, they've still done pretty well in Europe. So I think this one could be a really close tie, and I think if Marseille sort of again like sort of raise their game for Europe, if the fans do their job at the Velodrome, I think they can get through. But as you said, Di Maria just constantly seems to be the scourge of French teams, or even France national team. Such a good player, still to me seems such an unpleasant player, but very, very effective, very good on his day, and can cause problems. As you said, also this for Marseille, that sort of 90 to 93 vintage Marseille team, obviously with all the stuff that happened off the pitch. I still maintain that although it was the 93 team that won the Champions League, it was the sort of 1991 team that was actually better. 91, obviously, they got knocked out on penalties, and I think it was 90 that they lost the semi-final to a blatant handball
Yeah.
from a Benfica player, Vava or Vata or something.
Sava, yeah. Yeah,
And
that's right.
it's one of those things that's always trotted out, and probably was a factor in everything that happened afterwards with Marseille and Tapie and match fixing and all that kind of thing. So yeah, there is that extra sort of subplot to it. Again, I was going to say, I think Benfica are favourites. Maybe they're not even favourites. I really think this is, again, Marseille also hot, blow hot and cold, so it depends which turns up. But if they play at their best, then I think they can get through.
Quick question, because we want to whiz through these, but just on Marseille, we'll come on to the league game in a minute from the weekend. With Gasset, I keep forgetting he is on a short-term contract. Is there a bit of short-sightedness in this, where a lot of the balls are being juggled in this Europa Conference, in this Europa League tie? Because if they don't qualify again, the new manager, whomever that may be, and God knows who they are going to go for, is sort of coming in at almost with unrealistic expectations. If they don't qualify for the Champions League, for example, if they don't win this European competition, does that sort of hamstring what they can do in the summer? Because you know they're going to change players again.
They're not going to win the European competition, and there's always unrealistic expectations, whoever's
True.
there. I don't know. I mean, I discussed before, I felt a bit sorry for Gattuso. I just think whoever takes that job, it's pretty much poison chalice. I think it's such a difficult job at the best of times just because of all the pressures. And I think we've seen that with previous managers, even someone as robust as Tudor. Who did so well last year, it felt like it was too much pressure for him. Villas-Boas crumbled in the end. It seems to happen so often. And Gattuso, I don't think, has the managerial quality of those others. Gasset, yeah, I think it was sort of, if you're going to get rid of Gattuso, I think it's probably a good move just till the end of the season. He's kind of the, in a way, the exact opposite, very much a sort of arm around the shoulder kind of coach, and can maybe get short-term results. I mean, we'll see if, he started very well. More recently, it's not quite been as good. There's some tough fixtures coming up, I think. So, in a month or so's time, his record could look very, very different. But I think, in a way, it could work out well for everyone because there isn't that sort of extra pressure of trying to retain the job. I think it's everyone is just thinking short-term, and then we start again in the summer. But it feels like they're starting again every summer, both in terms of coach and playing staff. So I just, yeah, I mean, I feel not, I feel sorry for, but I think it's an almost impossible job, whoever has it.
For sure. Speaking of
When
impossible jobs.
you're trying to get rid of your star player in January.
Exactly that. A player who's ultimately got them through in this tie. Speaking of impossible jobs, that brings us on to Luis Enrique and PSG finally, who are all the stuff is going to be about the remontada and all that that goes before. Let's be realistic. They've drawn Barcelona. This is not the same Barcelona that it was back then. That said, they've improved. They beat Atletico Madrid at the weekend 3-0. I think since Xavi said he was going to leave, I think they've won eight on the spin, which make of that what you will. But on that side of the draw, the winner of that tie will face either the aforementioned Atletico Madrid or Borussia Dortmund. A lot of cocksure PSG fans are already saying we're on the way to Wembley. Do you buy that? I mean, I have to say, I fancy them over Barcelona. I just feel like this is the right time for them. But do you see them coming through a Diego Simeone ball grabbing semi-final, for example, if they were to get through? I mean, do you even see them getting through Barcelona?
It's PSG, so anything could happen. But I think
Set my own question, didn't I?
this draw is as good as it could possibly they could possibly have hoped for. I think they've avoided all the teams that you'd think would comfortably beat them, and the sort of three other teams on their draw, they definitely have the beating of. They could lose to anyone on their day, but I think they should start a tie against any of them as favourites. Barcelona have still got some very, very good players, and PSG do still have that mental block, although I think they have beaten Barcelona since then. That famous one with Mbappe and Pique trying to hold his shirt back. Although there's that whole remontada storyline and the fact that it was Enrique who was their coach, I think at the time, it's a very different Barcelona. It's not necessarily so different at PSG, but I think PSG can't get too cocky. They can't take their eye off the ball. I still think they've got a dodgy defense, but they've definitely got the quality, and I think enough of their top players on good form at the moment that given the draw, I think if they don't reach the final, I think it's a disappointment. I think this has, obviously there's lots that's very, very different, but in terms of the draw, it has shades of whichever year it was, 20, I think, that they got to the final, 21 maybe, whatever it
Yeah,
was,
20, was it 2021? Yeah, it feels like forever ago, doesn't it?
where they had a very, very kind draw.
Yeah, it and I the way I look at it is, as I say, I do see them getting to the final. I don't know why, but I've got a weird feeling Dortmund might even go through Atletico. I don't know why, but and that comes from somebody who tips Atletico to win it this year at the start of the
Well,
season.
neither of them are in great form at the moment.
No, exactly that. I feel like with Dortmund, it's all they've got left, and I don't know. I just have a feeling it won't be as straightforward as people think. But the other side of the draw, obviously Arsenal, Bayern Munich. Naturally, I'm going to be slightly biased, but I have a feeling that that will be a tight one. It's a bit of a coin flip, and then Real Madrid against Manchester City. I feel like PSG would rather play, probably rather play Arsenal and Real Madrid than Man City or Bayern Munich, but who knows? One thing's for sure, it will be interesting to see who comes through those ties. Like I say, PSG, they'll never have a better opportunity to give Mbappe a send off, that's for sure. Let's come into Ligue 1 then, shall we, and talk about some of the weekend's action. I think the big story that we have to visit straight away is Nantes. They've done it again, Jez. Valdemir Keita is doing Keita things. Josslyn Gourvennec is gone already. They lost 3-1 at home to Strasbourg, thanks to a couple of late Omega goals and some pretty catastrophic defending. They're right in the relegation zone. So what do we do? Break glass for emergency Antoine Kouambouaré, who has come back. Thoughts? I'm just going to throw that out there.
If you're going to get rid of your coach again and bring someone in, it's not the worst person to bring in.
No.
I mean, I think he's sort of got mixed results at keeping teams up, but last time he was brought in at Nantes, not only did he keep them up, he then went on to win the cup with them. So he's got recent pedigree and probably will have sort of the support of a lot of the fans at least behind him, and you'd have thought some of the players that are still there from when he was there. But again, it just speaks to a club and particularly a president that are just a bit of a head case. And I still think they'll probably be okay because I still don't think they'll finish bottom two, let's put it that way. But it feels again like one of those sort of, like we said a lot about Toulouse, like every year they seem to keep scraping survival, and it was almost like enough already, go down, do your sort of soul searching, your rebuilding, and come back better. I feel like maybe that's maybe what Nantes needs, but as long as Keita's there, it's difficult to see. It's similar to, in a way, to there's not so many of the outside factors, like outside the club factors, but similar to Longoria at Marseille. I know they have different positions, but as long as Keita's there, you can't really see that there'll ever be any stability and that any coach would ever be able to work as freely as he'd like.
It feels like Kouambouaré, as you say, will probably be into the end of the season, and then come what may, he'll probably move on again, and it's back to square one. Really big win for Strasbourg, though. A nod and a tip of the hat to Kevin Gamero, who becomes a Ligue 1 centurion, 100 goals in Ligue 1 for the, I think he's 36 now. So a little nod to him. Massive result that for Strasbourg, though, because it just keeps them far enough away from the relegation zone. And looking at some of the other results, obviously not a great weekend for yourself as Metz went down 2-1 to Reims. Lorient picked up a really useful point from my point of view anyway against Monaco with a very last minute towering header from Timo Bakayoko after two quite comedic own goals that one apiece in that game earlier on had happened as well. Clermont picking up a really big result for them against Le Havre, both teams finishing with 10 men in that one. And Toulouse losing on Friday night to Lyon, despite coming out roaring from the second half. And they were behind, but they went 2-1 up and then contrived to lose it 3-2. Jacob Bryan, the goal scoring centre back, coming up with another key goal in that one. And Rayan Cherki changing the game off the bench. We'll mention Montpellier in a second because they're in it. But that result for Clermont in particular, that probably sent shivers down your spine a bit, didn't it? Are you, as a Mets fan, are you looking up at Nantes and Lorient, maybe even Le Havre? Because we had Adam on, didn't we, a few weeks ago, and he was saying the same as I think you and I both thought. Le Havre might just fall into this sort of gap, and that defeat to Clermont has brought them right back into it.
I mean, just from a Mets point of view, they need to. I kind of want to say that, I've always said you just need to beat the teams around you and kind of try to stay up doing that. The problem is that they've don't have many of those matches left. Looking at the fixtures that they've got left, Monaco, Brest, Lens, Lille, Rennes. And last match of the season against PSG. That only leaves matches away to Le Havre and Strasbourg, Strasbourg being the extra sort of thing that it's also a local derby. So, I can see them getting at very best 6 points between now and the end of the season. Looking at their last three matches, they beat Nantes, they beat Clermont. So they did what they had to do there. Losing away to Reims isn't sort of the end of the world in theory, but they're those kind of matches where you just hope that they'll sneak something because ultimately, possibly every point's going to count. And so, going down to two goals, one of which was a massive defensive mix-up, and the other one just a real bit of class later on from Ito is the kind of thing that you think, well, we need those little things to go our way, otherwise we're in trouble. So, he did well with those two wins to kind of close the gap above us, but I just fear that that gap above and Clermont below, whatever, I just can't see Metz getting enough points from their remaining matches to stay up anyway. So I'm sort of not really bothered about where other teams are. But yeah, as you said, from that point of view of sort of getting those points and teams around you, that's a massive, massive win for Strasbourg. I think, as you alluded to earlier, I think Nantes' defence, and I'm not saying that's why Phil's not here, but I know she's a huge advocate of Alban Lafont. I think, he certainly gets at least a share of an assist for Gamera's goal and the second goal let in from relative distance, and it wasn't exactly a rocket, it was near post. Yeah, it's Strasbourg did what they needed to do. They were given a lot of help as well, and maybe that's what you need when you're down there to get those points against the teams around you, and to make sure you don't help the teams around you to those points, without even having to sort of break stride.
That's why I was particularly pleased that Lorient managed to scrape that point, because they had led in that game against Monaco. To as you what you were saying with Metz there is, if you can pick up a point that you don't expect to pick up, that could prove crucial, and that's why that one felt quite big for me. If you assume Lyon are clear now and they are 5 points above that clutch of teams, if we assume Toulouse and Strasbourg are on the edge of it, we should touch on Montpellier. Phil wanted us to say they were all right for 20 minutes, and they kind of were. And then Kylian Mbappe, and well, not just Mbappe, but he was at the centre of it. Just a lot of very, very good goals from PSG. The Kang In Lee one was my favourite, but the Vitinha
It
opener.
would be.
Yeah, of course, yeah, I'm slightly biased. Mbappe's absolute brilliance to secure a hat trick, in particular that second goal in off the bar. They always look better, don't they? But that defeat really sums up where Montpellier are at the moment, doesn't it? A 6-2 home defeat, albeit to the champions. PSG coming off the back of three straight draws. So they weren't exactly in sparkling form. Montpellier are right in this though, aren't they? On 26 points, level with Lorient. They're looking over their shoulders, the former champions, at this point.
Yeah, they're a point above the playoff place and only three above the relegation places. So, despite what I just says, they're right down there, and I haven't looked at their run in, but I mean, I don't think too much should be read into the sort of size of the defeat to PSG. As you said, at half time, I think it was 2-2. So they made a good fist of it, and PSG's XG actually wasn't that high. So I think it just happened to be one of those matches where, as you said, there were a lot of very good goals. And sometimes that just happens, sort of perfect storm against you. And again, as long as it doesn't come down to goal difference, losing to PSG home or away isn't the end of the world. But looking at their run in, it's exactly the opposite to Metz. They've got
All
Le
the teams,
Havre, Lorient, Clermont, Nantes, Toulouse. So it kind of there's a lot of six pointers there, which work both ways. Every time they, if they win one of them, they're putting someone else in deeper trouble as well. So they've got it very much in their hands. If they stuff up from here, they fully deserve to go down. But I don't expect them to. I think they've got enough class and enough of a kind run in.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I feel like they need probably at least two wins from those four clubs around them. And if they get two wins, I think that will see them over the line, even if it is limping, because as we've alluded to before, there's a few teams worse than them. So yeah, I do
If
agree with
it
you.
does go to the last two matches of the season, they've got Monaco and Lens, who both probably will have something to play for, though. So.
Yeah, that's a struggle for sure. And I look at Lorient's fixtures and I wince a little bit because there's quite a few big ones there. But anyway, coming up to the other results from the weekend, Rennes with a 2-0 win over Marseille. Benjamin Borogo with one of the goals there. He signed a new contract. Martin Terrier seems to be good
We
for
always
us.
used to. Last season, I kept sort of referring to Wissam Ben Yedder as Wissam Pen Yedder because most of his goals are penalties. I think the same for Sierro at Toulouse and Bourigeaud at Rennes. You might as well, same as Harry Kane, you might as well just
I'll chuck him in as well.
open bracket, pen, close bracket.
Penaldo, etc. Very much so. Good result for Rennes for sure, though, and that gives them a little bit of a leg up in the fight for European place, as we mentioned. The Monaco result, probably the other
I
game of the
mean,
week
again,
in.
just to say that I don't think Stefan is doing anything special. He's doing what that team should have been
Should
doing
be
all
doing.
season. They underachieved the first half of the season, and now they're playing to the level they should be playing at. I think, the one thing you've got to say is that he seems to have remotivated Guiri, who wasn't playing brilliantly, but seems to be on great form now. He has the not luck, but Terrier, you don't come back from an injury like that quickly. And so he's sort of now getting back to that full match fitness and getting back to close to his best, which is great. So I, Rennes beating Marseille at home, I don't think is a shock.
No, I tend to agree. I do tend to agree. What was a shock, though, was that Nice scored not one, not two, but three goals away from home as they beat Lens. I watched this game on Saturday night. It's a really good game. I kind of did that thing of like, there's not much else on. I was always going to watch it, but I was like, I might do a few things while it's on. That didn't last long. I was riveted by this one. I'm guessing you probably, like me, didn't see this coming. A couple of goals for Terra Moffi, one from the spot. Kiefer Turan popping up with a goal just to remind Didier Deschamps of his qualities. Elyouahi pulled one back, but there was goals, there was corners, there was bookings. It was all sorts in this game. Does that?
Disallowed goal, it would have made it one all as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Which was a quite slightly controversial decision. With the sort of results around them, I should mention that Brest and Lille drew 1-1, so Brest cemented second place. With that win, that puts Nice back into fifth, joint points with Lille and three behind Monaco in third. Does that sort of reignite some hope, sort of, for Nice, do you think, moving in? Because much like I think you and I and Adam said when we did that pod together, they never really convinced me, but you see a result like this, you can't overlook it, can you? Because Lons have been on really good run themselves. It's a really big win this for Farioni's men, and maybe answers a few questions. But what's your thoughts on where they are now?
I mean, first of all, I'd say I think Lens had a big off day, and there was some pretty bad defending in there as well. But yeah, Nice looked decent enough, and I think more importantly, A result like that should kind of give them confidence. It did feel like that was a big issue recently, just sort of confidence taking a hit. We know that, Moffi is one of those strikers who kind of, is a form player. He hits bad patches, hits good patches. So a couple of goals will do well for his confidence. I think Cho set up the first two goals. He obviously was, looked a big star when he was at Angers. I don't think it went brilliantly for him in Spain, but if this is an indication that he's settling into the team, you look at the team, they're still a quality team, and I still think not they were underperforming in terms of results earlier in the season, but they were sort of they could have played more expansive, more attacking football and arguably got just as, been just as effective. So I think when the defense lost its form and they started chipping goals, they just didn't have those sort of reflexes from earlier in the season to think, well, in that case, we'll just, flip to a more attacking game. It's taken a while to do that. But, with the points they amassed earlier in the season, if they can put a few results together, you have to say on, over the balance of the season, it wouldn't be undeserved if they finish up there. It's just that, as Adam has said a few times, it's been frustrating because they're just really, really most for the most part, not fun to watch. Which I wouldn't mind if it was, stupid example, but Metz, because they're just the type of players and club that sort of need to sort of hunker down and just grind out results. But you look at the players that Nice have, they could and should have been playing more expansive football than they were, I think.
Agreed. I'd say watching this, I was genuinely in disbelief. And the weird part as well is, although Nice won what looks like comfortably, Lens had a lot of really good opportunities in that second half. Could easily have pulled it back to 3-2 later on and could have got something out of it. So it's one of those results that you look at, you can't really understand how it happened, but it just happened. It's just one of those. But big weekend and a few things have changed in Liga. Just quickly before we talk international bits and bobs, PSG, I mean, we know they're going to win the league. They're 12 points clear in first. Brest maintaining that brilliant season in second. Monaco and Lille are in the top four. Nice, Lens, Marseille, Rennes, Reims, and Lyon down to 10th. And then you've got that kind of relegation scrap if you include Toulouse and Strasbourg in 11th and 12th in that. They do have a 2-point cushion off of Montpellier, Lorient, Nantes, Metz, and Clermont. Reading down the table. And of course, we've got a break now until the 31st. 31st of March, when we come back with Lorient-Brest, which is a pretty big one for both sides, really. Nice, Nantes, Clermont, Toulouse, Le Havre, Montpellier, that's a big one. Strasbourg, Rennes, and Marseille, PSG. Enough said. I think anyone who knows this podcast will know that that will be quite an interesting watch at the Velodrome for Le Classique. But we will leave Liga behind there until the 31st and let's talk a little bit of internationals. Before we go into the fixtures, thoughts on the new kits? Are you a fan? Are you not a fan? There's a big old rooster coming back with a classic look to the home and away strips. Did you like those?
It needs to grow on me a bit. I quite like that it's a brighter blue, which I think could
Me
be, but I
too.
don't know if it's a little bit too bright.
It's better in person. I've seen it in person. It's quite nice.
Yeah, I can imagine. The second kit. Normally, I like the pinstripes. Something about this one, it just looks dirty.
It
But
gives me Platini vibes. I don't know why I like it.
well, I
I
think
like
that's the idea of both kits to an extent. But they're growing on me, but.
Yeah. Give it
Like
time.
all kits, I think, if mine's gone completely blank about who the captain is, Mbappe, if whenever
Lesser
it is,
known.
and if in July Mbappe is lifting the trophy wearing one of those kits, then yes, I will like the kit.
I know what you mean. And I'll do that thing I do every time they release a new kit and go, no, it's ridiculously priced, and then I'll end up buying it anyway. So but yes. So aside from
I quite like the
kits,
goalkeepers' kids.
they're quite interesting, aren't they? The Nike ones. Quite like them as well. But yeah, so aside from the kits, what's your
By the way, Belgium and Germany's second kits are the best.
Yeah, I like the Germany home one, especially the long sleeve with the flare
I
of
haven't
the
seen
kit.
the home, but the away is pink. I think it
It
looks
is
great.
pink and
And
purple.
Belgium's second kit is based on Tintin.
I'm not having that. I'm not having that. The brown short, good Lord, I'm not having it.
Well, I
There
haven't
are.
seen the shorts. I just meant the shirt.
Oh
I
yeah,
didn't realize they'd gone the whole hog.
they have gone full brown on the shorts. Yeah, I'm not sure about that one. Dare I say it, I actually don't mind England's away
I
kit, the
mean,
purple one.
tempted to make a joke about being appropriate shorts for when Belgium bottled it or something.
Yeah, I know where you're going with that. Right, back to France. So they've got Germany in, when is that? On the 23rd, which is what, Saturday? Saturday night? Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, which is a friendly international. And of course, well, they're all friendlies at this time of year, aren't they? They've got Chile on the 26th, which I think is that next Wednesday. I've lost my calendar. Next Tuesday. So back to back. What's your thoughts? Velodrome will host the game against Chile, and they are playing at the, is it the Groupama? I think it's a group. Yeah, Lyon against Germany. Are either of these two, when I say are they important, every game's important in a lead up to a major tournament. I think I'm right in saying this is the last two friendlies before the Euros. Thoughts on the squad that Deschamps has gone with, and do you read into these too much? I mean, France are going into this Euros as one of the favourites, if not the favourites. Maybe point to prove post World Cup defeat. Where do you stand on what Deschamps has gone with, and what's your expectations of these two games?
I don't have a massive issue with what he's gone with. I don't think there's too many surprises in there. I wouldn't necessarily pick all of those players. I still don't rate Jules Koundé whatsoever, for example. I still think Konaté, still not sure he would be up there, certainly as a starter for me. We know that Deschamps is sort of very loyal. So, Upamecano, I think, is excellent on his day, is really not in form at the moment, but I'm not surprised to see him in the squad. I'd like to see Pavard being given a decent go at centre back, actually, because I think he's having a good season.
It's been great for us, yeah.
Further forward, on his club form, I don't think Kolo Muani deserves to be anywhere near the squad at the moment, but we know that Deschamps clearly very much likes him and is sort of really willing him to do well. So I don't think there's too many surprises there. I think the obvious thing that we should say since the squad was picked is that Griezmann's pulled out of the squad with an ankle injury, which means that he will end his record of 84 consecutive matches for France,
Just nuts.
spanning 7 years, which I think is absolutely amazing. And it's a shame that that record's going to end. And it will be interesting to see how they play without him because, as we've said so many times, I think he does such an underrated role for that team in every position. He's the one who makes things tick. Everything goes through him. But the number of times he'll be sort of sprinting back and making a crucial tackle as well. So I do actually worry about how they'll adapt to life without him, and maybe it's important that they start to. And if it's going to happen, it might as well be in two friendlies. Interestingly, he was replaced in the squad by Guendouzi, and although Griezmann is sort of nominally a midfielder now, I would not say that's a like-for-like replacement.
No.
I guess there's enough sort of attacking talent in the squad there that it didn't need he didn't need to be replaced with a more attacking player, but I still thought that was a slightly strange pick.
Does it
They're
open the
not the,
door? Sorry,
sorry.
sorry to cut across you. Does it open the door for Warren Zaïre-Emery to maybe come into the first team, as in the starting squad? Because we know how hyped he is. Tchouaméni's been brilliant this season for Real Madrid, but has only just come back to fitness. Camavinga the same. Then you've got Rabiot and Fofana. Is there an argument that Zaïre-Emery could come in and play the Griezmann link role from midfield, maybe? Is that the opportunity to blood him now?
Again, I'm not sure about the Griezmann role, but I definitely think that there's space for him to somehow create a place for himself in the first team. I think there's if Deschamps picking his midfield three, let's say, based on form, I think it would be, or based on not form, but if every, all things being equal, I think he'd go Rabiot, Tchouaméni, Griezmann. But I think Zaïre-Emery already, we've seen with PSG. I mean, if you are, I, in my opinion, he was their best player of the group stage of the Champions League, and they wouldn't, forget about Mbappe. If it wasn't for Zaïre-Emery, they wouldn't have got through the group stage. He's got the already the intelligence and the work ethic and everything that, he's not a bad call sort of on the right side of midfield if you're worried and I'm worried about whoever's going to be at right back. So yeah, I think he could already definitely make, I'm not sure about sort of replacing Griezmann, but I definitely think he could come into the first team and do a very important job. In terms of the matches, I mean, first of all, I think it's ridiculous that there's friendlies at this stage of the season. I think it's disgusting, actually. I don't think it's fair on, I don't really care about clubs generally. I don't care about the, I'm not going to shed any tears for the top clubs, but I think it's unfair on the players, and I just think it's not, unfair isn't the right word, but we're all set for hopefully exciting run-ins in all the different leagues, all different aspects, and it's sort of just as that kind of run-in starts, it stops for 2 weeks or whatever. I just think it's a bit silly. Apart from
Whatever.
that, they're just friendlies. So, if we win them, they're important. If we lose them, they're just friendlies. But I do think playing Germany, last time we played them, we sort of handed them a win, even though they were mid-crisis and had a caretaker manager in place. So I feel like that one's sort of quite important just in terms of putting the record straight, especially because the Euro is in Germany. And so even though it's not a vintage Germany, they're still going to be among the favourites.
Agreed.
Yeah, I think that one's more important. If Chile, I'm guessing Chile will be a little bit more about experimentation and yeah.
You're surely going to see like the Klauses and the Fofanas, etc., in that particular game. Yeah, you'd imagine. I tend to agree with you on both sides, and especially with the friendlies. Like, I don't know when it became a thing where teams just didn't like. Do you remember like the they used to go on training camps, and you just used to play friendlies when you went to the country where the Euros were or the World Cup was, and you played a couple of friendlies there, and that was your build up. I mean, let's be honest, it's all about money and commercialization, isn't it? I mean, we talked about the kits, that's part of this, isn't it? The teams will be wearing the new strips, and all of these things, it's all based around money and commercialization. So it is what it is. But yeah, for sure, it's going to be a big summer ahead, and of course we will do our best to cover it as best we can. Hopefully it all goes well. But they are the fixtures upcoming for
In
France.
terms, just quickly, in terms of sort of under 21s and Olympics, that I really worry it's gonna, I mean, okay, the Euros is one thing, but for the Olympics, I really worry it's gonna be like the last Olympics where sort of no club releases any of the decent players and it ends up being a sort of, third rate squad. Real Madrid have already said that they're not gonna release their players, which rules out sort of three or four French players potentially, including Mbappe. I think they can have one or two overage players, and so it'll be interesting to see who's picked. I saw today that Benzema might make himself available, which
Of course he will.
don't think I need to say what I think of that. But yeah, I hope that again, there's a very talented Euro squad there, and they sort of weirdly, the first half of Henri's tenure was brilliant. The second half has been awful for some reason. And I'm still not sure he knows who his best team is. In a way, that's a good thing because there's so many talented youngsters, but, and, some really good ones missing out, like Mathys Tel, for example, or Cherki's only come in. Cherki was left out and has only come in because of someone else. I can't remember who pulled out with an injury. Yeah, I think I'd like to see us do well in the Euros and the Olympics because it's in France. It would just be nice if it's not even if we gave ourselves a fighting chance, if all the clubs gave us a fighting chance.
Yeah, agreed. And speaking of players release, I'd be very surprised if Arsenal release William Saliba in pre-season either, based on previous. So there's another one that I think Thierry Henry has suggested he might be interested in calling up. I would be surprised if they let him go in pre-season. But yeah, we shall see. Just really quickly, we are pushed for time tonight, but I just wanted to get your thoughts on the Paul Pogba situation since we last spoke. Do you have a view on it? I mean, I know some people have sort of said, there's no smoke without fire, etc., and so on. I was on the camp of this is a man's career, a man's livelihood, and a player who had the world literally in his hands, not that long ago. Which side of the argument do you sit on? Do you sit on the professional athletes should know what they're putting into their bodies side, or do you sit on the he's been through a pretty hellish time for the last 18, 24 months, and this has just culminated in what could be the end of a really promising and glittering career?
To be honest, both.
I was conflicted, I must admit.
I mean, it depends. Like, if it's something he knowingly did, then
No
my
sympathy.
sympathy is reduced. If it's something he sort of accidentally did, but as you said, professional athletes should know what they're doing, then I feel sorry for him to an extent. Although, it wouldn't be the first time that's happened. Some get away with it, some don't. But yeah, just from the human side, I do feel sorry for him. I know there was a lot of schadenfreude, a lot of people who just don't like him, not even just Man United fans. And I can understand why he rubs people up the wrong way, because he does sort of straddle that line between self-confidence and arrogance. And so if it's not your team that he's doing the business for, then, or and certainly if he's strutting around or dabbing or whatever against your team, then I can understand why people don't like him. But he was, it's sad to use the past tense, but he was a superb footballer, even for France. He really had his off periods, but the way he raised his game in 2018 on the pitch, but maybe more importantly, off the pitch, in the press conferences, creating the atmosphere, the amazing sort of pep talks before the knockout matches. He was a massive, massive factor in France winning. Even the last Euros, it felt like he was, despite everything about Mbappe and Benzema, he was the arguably the Benzema was there for the last Euros, wasn't he?
Yeah, that was the recall, wasn't it? I think. Was it? Yeah.
Or was it the World Cup? I think he
Was it
was.
that? Was it the World Cup?
Anyway,
He was there at some point.
yeah, he was in a way the central figure. He was actually the main creative outlet, but also was playing so on the edge that, it was a couple of his mistakes, including in the last match. That one where they got knocked out penalties that sort of held France back. So it showed how crucial his form and mood, I guess, was to how France played. And so I think it is a big loss, and it is a shame to see someone who still, I think, had a lot to give. To his career seemingly ended prematurely by, injuries, horrible, stuff in terms of kidnapping and blackmailing and all that, which you don't really wish on anyone. And yeah, I guess, depending on what happens with appeals, the sort of ignominy of a drugs ban. So yeah, as a France fan, he's very, very grateful for what he did in 2018, and arguably 2013 when he helped France win the Under 20 World Cup. I think it's a shame. If I was an English Man United fan, I might feel different.
No, I get it. I get it. And I'm like you. I think it's a man's career at the end of the day. And if he has gone full Lance Armstrong, then naturally that gets revoked. But I don't know. Everything that he suggested and has come across, it strikes me that he was just trying to get back from injury, and maybe that's where this has gone a bit wonky. I just don't feel like in the modern era a player would take that gamble, but what do you know? What do you know? Anyway, we will leave it there because we have been an hour or so. So we will wrap things up. We will probably be back next week, although maybe we'll be late again next week, given the fact that Tuesday is that chilly game. So we may look to do Wednesday next week as well. If the games are a bit dead, we might not do a pod next week. Just giving you all a heads up because, you know, life is what life is. But we will be back soon enough. I'm sure we'll fit something in if we can do it. So my thanks to you, Jez, for popping back on. And yeah, hopefully speak to you next week. So many thanks.
No problem. Thank you.
And thank you to you, dear listener, for tuning in and for being patient with us while we had a couple of days to get this time sorted out. So if you are a flan, no, if you're a flan, that'd be very interesting. If you're a fan, though, of Les Bleus, obviously cheer on the national side. If you're not and you're just a French football fan in general, you've got another week and then the normal resolution to the title run-in, European qualification and relegation scraps continues. But whatever games you are watching, enjoy your French football and we will speak to you very soon.